Hello. Now we'll talk about extraction. So in this photograph, we see actually several extraction elements. We will talk about this later, but this is the first one of them, electrostatic deflector, which bends the beam a bit outwards so that it can fit inside this device here, which is an electromagnetic channel. And then we come out from here, and there's one. So this is normally down here, now the cyclotron is open. There's a focusing channel here and another focusing channel here. But now let's go and see more about extraction. Well, all in all, we can classify the extraction schemes in several ways. So first, we have this classification to linear accelerators and circular accelerators. Linear accelerators are easy in this respect because there is no extraction problem. The beam starts from one end of the linear accelerator and comes straight out. There's no extra tricks needed to get the beam out. And then circular accelerators, we have either constant orbit radius like synchrotrons and betatrons, or increasing orbital radius like cyclotrons and synchrocyclotrons. And in this constant orbit radius in synchrotrons, either pulsed electromagnetic fields are used, so-called kickers, and then slow extraction with a third order resonance, for example, here. And then cyclotrons, it can be either stripping. For example, we have negative hydrogen H minus, a proton that has two electrons. It hits a very thin carbon foil, and both electrons are taken away, and the charge state changes from minus one to plus one, and the particles come easily out. Or using electromagnetic fields, and that can be divided into two cases. We use so-called integer resonance, where nu r is close to an integer, or it goes through an integer value, or half integer resonance. And this integer resonance, we have there two groups. One is brute force extraction. We will soon see what this brute means in this case, and then precessional extraction. And this is mostly used in cyclotrons or stripping if we have negative ions. Also some positive ions, as we will see. But there are some limitations. Okay, when we accelerate the particles, the radius of the orbit increases. So we can increase the turn separation by acceleration or by magnetic pumps. So this drdn is the radius increase per turn. So it's either acceleration or this magnetic pumps. And this acceleration, we can easily get this equation. So it's proportional to the radius. And then the relative energy increase per turn. So this is the maximum energy, and this is the energy gain per turn. And the relativistic factors here. And this nu r is related to the field index, which is related to the field gradient. So when the field increases with radius, it of course means that the turn separation will decrease. because you're talking about B row value, and if B increases, then row doesn't increase so much. So looking at this, there are three ways to get high extraction rate. So to get the extraction rate is better for higher radius increase per turn. So one, to build cyclotrons with a large average radius without increasing the maximum energy, of course. Which then mean that when we increase the radius, we must decrease the magnetic field correspondingly. So we keep the maximum B rho value constant. and make the energy gain per turn as high as possible. So this here, which means higher electric fields, higher voltages. But there is a practical limit. So at some level of electric field, we could start to get sparking. So that's a practical limit. And then we actually beam into the fringe field where nu r drops. So here. But now we should remember that for an isochronous magnetic field, so that the revolution frequency is constant, then nu r is related to the field index, it increases with radius. And then if we go to an area where nu r drops, then the opening frequency decreases and the particles can make only some turns, perhaps 10 turns. And then after these turns, they are so behind the RF that they start to get decelerated. So there's a certain practical limit here as well, how low nu r values we can go. And this is also, of course, calls for high energy gain that we can do this. Okay, but now we remember that for the same maximum field for this, I mean, magnetic field and the same energy gain per turn. Here, this energy it's proportional to B rho squared, so proportional to radius squared. So if you keep the maximum magnetic field the same, then this increases as well, and it increases as B rho squared. So we will get 1/r dependence. So this is how the turns become denser and denser when we go outwards in the cyclotron. and this item three here, we access the beam into fringe field where nu r drops as far as we can. It's important, especially for high energy cycles, because nu r is close to gamma, relativistic gamma. And when gamma increases, then this increases. So for an isochronous field, as I said, just said, this field index is related to gamma and also nu r. And so here we have the gamma squared minus one. That's field index for an isochronous field, and for example for a three sector magnet we have this the flutter term, and here nu r squared is 1 plus k, which is gamma squared. And now we for example, if you take the PSI, separately check the cyclotron, this spring cyclotron at the maximum field nu r is 1.6. And at the extraction, it has dropped to 1.1. And we have this 1 over nu r squared factor. So there's a factor of 2 in turn separation in this case when we are able to accelerate the particles up to nu r equal to 1.1. Then the field is not asynchronous anymore. And now about the resonant extraction. So normally the radial gain per turn by acceleration is not enough. And magnetic perturbations, those we use to enhance the turn separation. And now let's look at integer resonance, nu r equals to n. And like, for example, in our cyclotron, nu r is close to 1. So we go through this nu r equal to 1 resonance. Another brute force. What does it mean? If you have a bump in axial magnetic field, so it has an amplitude small en and cosine n, and then theta, this theta n gives the direction for the maximum. And you can think this, for example, for effectively this happens if we have a non-centered beam. Let's have a magnetic field which is cylinder symmetric and it's isochronous. It's like a bowl where the edges are higher. And then the particles go around on a constant field. But if we shift the beam a bit sideways, then on one side it goes higher and on the other side lower. And then this is first harmonic bump there, effectively. And we will come back to this later. This off-centered beam. Now the beam is driven off-center, and the maximum radial gain per turn is then pi times radius times this relative bump here. So the bump divided by the magnetic field there. What is the without the bump, and then this integer number here, which is typically 1. Okay, and now let's look at what it would mean. Typically in a conventional cyclotron, the magnetic field is around 1.7 Tesla. And it's fairly easy to introduce a bump amplitude of 0.1 millitesla. But that introduces a radial gain of about 0.2 millimeters. So not very much. It's really, really little. So in order to have millimeters here, then this must be big, the field. And that's where the name comes from, brute force. So we must really use force here. This is not used anymore. It was used, for example, in the AEG compact cyclotron. And now to the precessional extraction, which is mostly used. So the beam goes through nu r resonance with the first order perturbation, like in the brute force. And then the beam starts to oscillate around its equilibrium orbit with the frequency nu r, or because we are now close to 1 and we are looking at the beam at a fixed angle, then we can effectively see the difference from 1. So this is the frequency that we see. And now particles are accelerated to large radii and nu r decreases with radius. So So then the frequency goes down. Or actually increases here. So this increases. And when we have the two consecutive turns, so turn number n and turn number n minus one, and then the outer turn starts to slow down. So nu r is going down. earlier, and so they are these two turns. They have a slightly different frequency, and then the phase difference between them increases. So you can think this case like if you have a bicycle wheel, and you have a reflector at the axle, and you see the reflector from the side when the bicycle is moving. And then this reflector makes us just a straight line. But then we move the reflector to the poke a bit away from the center, and then it starts to oscillate there. If you follow the bicycle wheel, then it goes around. And now. Now this speed of going around decreases when for example in the winter snow is stuck on the bicycle wheel, so the diameter increases gradually when there's more and more snow, so it starts to go around slowlier and slowlier. And if you have two of these bicycle wheels almost at the identical place, the other is just a little behind the first one, that is going in the front, it has slightly more snow on the wheel, so its rotation frequency is smaller, and then the phase difference increases, and this leads to a separation of these two reflectors in the direction of movement. And this is here, this one so-called harmonic coil. And we use a bump with harmonic coils so that the average of the harmonic coils is zero. So for example, we have one coil, they don't look like this, they are round in our case. But at the fixed radius, we have one here, positive field, and then two negatives, and so the angle for the positive now in this case is here, and we take the average here, take the integral, it's zero, so it doesn't change the average field, so the field remains isochronous, and we can change the direction of the effective maximum by changing these currents gradually. So that if you make a Fourier expansion of this and take the first term, the cosine theta, then we can move the theta smoothly around here. So that we change the currents here, so that the sum is zero. And in a phase space, now this is radius versus radial momentum. It has been normalized with charge and magnetic field, so it is in centimeters, but this is not important here. And here I have tracked particles. So I've started from the equilibrium orbit and taking a beam there. First I let the beam particle go around many turns without acceleration, so then it defines the eigen ellipse, and I picked up a few particles around the eigen ellipse and then started to accelerate it. They all had the same energy in the beginning, and you can see that it goes outwards, but they are overlapping. And then this is the radius where we have nu r equal to one, and we have we have the first harmonic bump there in a proper direction and the proper amplitude, and then we have this kind of rotation, and here they are well separated. We can place here a septum, and on this side we have electric field that kicks this out. So the precession takes place after nu r equal to 1, where we have the first harmonic bump. And this very gently increases the turn separation. But it's not quite easy. Well, let's look at this first. So here I have the static equilibrium orbit close to nu r equal to 1. Not exactly, because at nu r equal to 1, this stable area goes to 0. You have already seen this picture before. So these are stable here, and then when we come outwards, the nu r decreases due to nonlinear focusing. And then at this point, there's nu r equal to 1, and then it becomes unstable. But now here there is no first order perturbation. And if I put the first order perturbation at the proper angle, this happens. So the stable area opens in one corner, and now turn after turn, these particles here, they go out, and out they go. But if I have it on a not so good place, then something else happens. It opens here or here. And the particles should go outwards. This is outwards here. And here they would go inwards. And here I'm looking at the beam at the entrance of the first extraction element, that is a deflector. Now some examples. Here again, I have the beam represented by the particles around the eigen ellipse, and they are overlapping, and here we have the resonance. And if I just look at the center of the beam, they would be well separated. But as you can see, they should be separated along this axis, but if you look, take a projection here, they are overlapping. This is very bad. Let's just try another angle and perhaps change the amplitude, even worse. So now the now that this has opened here or here, I suppose somewhere here, even worse. But it is possible to find a good combination of the first harmonic amplitude and the direction where the positive maximum is, like this. And it goes here. If you don't get the beam out, it goes here, 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 and then it could even go further. But here in this area, the field is too low to be isochronous. So these particles will be lacking the RF. And at some point, they are not actuated anymore. And now here, this would be the this or this would be the proper place to place the septum, because these are well separated and these are well separated. And here a note that I have used just monoenergetic beam, and I studied from the equilibrium orbit, not from the inside, but at a rather large radius, like here, 93 centimeters or so. In reality, the particles, they have energy spread, which will then even make this even more overlapping. And if you want to have single turn extraction, so take only one turn out, then we must have well-centered beam. So here I come back to this bowl thing. So the magnetic field is like a bowl. Of course, here the sectors also, but the average field is like a bowl. And then if we shift the beam radially, the bowl doesn't change at all, but the shifted beam feels effectively first order bump there. And then depending on the direction of the bump, this can happen or this can happen. So the beam must be very, very well centered until here, and then we get the coherent amplitude, which then leads to this precession. This is called the precession. And if you want to have singleton extraction, we must have small RF phase width. So that then it's possible to have, so that the RF phase for the accelerated particles is about the same. And then we can use so-called phase slits because the position depends on energy, and the energy depends on phase. And we can have this kind of phase slit system close to the center of the machine. Or another way of coming around this is to have this flat topping of D volts, what I talked about before. And now here, when we cross the resonance, you are equal to one resonance, it produces a coherent amplitude, which is this much here. So looks pretty much the same as before for this brute force, pi r, and then the relative bump. But now here we have the n effective, which is effectively how many turns it takes at nu r equal to one, which is defined this way, one over d nu r dn. The slower nu r is changing, the bigger is the effective number here. And then this precession introduces a maximum turn separation, which is this much here, two times this amplitude times sine pi one minus nu r. And typically we can access the particles up to nu r equal to 0.8. Then this sine pi 0.2 gives us something like 0.58. And then this can be several, so that then we get a bigger turn separation than with brute force. Now this we don't go through very detailed half integer resonance because it's not used in isochronous cyclotrons. Typically, it's typically used in synchrocyclotrons, and there are not so many of them anymore on the market. But now, yeah, there's one superconducting synchrocyclotron for isotope production produced, a commercial one. But here, there's a difference compared to the precessional extraction. In the precessional extraction, we have just a bump here, magnetic field, and at some angle here, but now there's a gradient. And so the field is its gradient times the distance from the reference radius, but the effective field is zero of this bump, of gradient bump. And since there's a gradient, it changes the bit of frequency because it changes focusing properties. And then there's a frequency shift. And now we are not going into these details, but the idea is that the particles are locked to a resonance due to this frequency shift. So, and there's a stop band there, and it has a certain width. And the stop band here is nu r equals to 1 n over 2. And inside the stop band, the beat on the frequency is imaginary, which is responsible for exponential amplitude growth. And the particle will be positive rotation around the cyclotron center. The beta oscillation is described by this equation here. And the maximum amplitude increase per turn can be written like this. So here we have the gradient. But let's not go into details here. And inside the stop band, the amplitude initially grows or decreases exponentially according to the starting position, but finally ends up growing. And even if nu r is slightly different from this resonance nu n over 2, the resonance locks the phase of the oscillation to a fixed value. And the particles near the central particle, they hardly move. And this gradient is done by two elements. Negative gradient, which is called peeler, and the positive gradient puppet is called the regenerator. And they are displaced by about 90 degrees because we are close to nu r equal to 1. And as I said just before, this regenerative extraction is mainly used in synchrocyclotrons. And very, very quick comparison between the integer and half integer resonances. So the integer, which we use in most cyclotrons, so this precessional extraction, so there we have a flat pump and the shape is not critical, but in this gradient one, this second order or half integer resonance, we have a gradient pump and the shape is of course critical because it defines the gradient. And here nu r equal to 1 resonance, there is no shift in beta frequency, but here frequency is towards the half integer value. This is energy selective and this is radius selective. And here we have a constant radial gain per turn, of course in a limited range, because when we go further and further out, then the energy gain is less because the particles are not anymore at the optimal phase, RF phase. So this is a constant radial gain, and here is exponential growth of radial gain asymptotically. And here we accelerate the particles to about nu r equal to 0.8, which gives additional turn separation through precession. So here we have this 1 over nu r squared, the factor, and also this turn separation, because this precession increases the phase difference between the turns. Okay, and then resonance extraction at high energies. Remember that nu r is around relativistic gamma. So this 1 over 1 or 2 over 2 resonance cannot be used. And then the possibility is 3 over 2 or 4 over 2 resonances. And nonlinear resonances. At first, nonlinear resonance is a third order resonance, and that can be also used. So for a three-set sector cyclotron, nu r equal to 3 over 3, so that's one, of course, but we could use a sextuple there, and then it would be a slow extraction there. So now there's no first order perturbation here, and so if you think of the third order resonance, so this nonlinear resonance, then if we had a hexapole component here, then it like in synchrotrons, they are separate hexapoles. So that then we can shrink this stable area to zero, because using this gradient, second order gradient, then we change the focusing properties, and then nu r goes to the resonance, and then this area goes to zero. In cyclotrons, this area, stable area, goes to zero when we pass the nu r equal to one resonance, and the particles then which are on the unstable side, they go out. So like here. Now there's one more thing about resonances. So stability of vertical motion in extraction. So especially in precessional extraction, where nu r goes through one, that's where we sort of ignite the precession. Nu z also varies greatly, and that can lead to several resonance crossings. And whenever there's resonance, then amplitude grows. And in medium energy cyclotrons, these resonances are nu r equal to one, and nu r equals to two times nu z. So then these horizontal and vertical, to axial, horizontal and radial and axial oscillations, they can couple, and then for example, oscillation radially can induce very very big amplitude oscillations axially. And nu z equals to one half. And this may be crossed before extraction, so we must limit the radial amplitude induced by nu r equal to one to a few millimeters, in order not to blow up the beam axially. And this coupling resonance, which couples nu r equals to two nu z, that depends strongly on the beam quality. So in cyclotrons, this resonance can be usually crossed easily, but in synchrocyclotrons, which has poor beam quality, poorer than in isochronous cyclotrons, then some particles are lost due to this resonance. And here is the list of these resonances. I'm not going to talk about these, but the resonance and what is it's driven by what? So nu r equals to nu z, two nu z, it just is there. There's nothing in the field that would introduce it. It's just the beam itself. Radial oscillation results into axial, because they are sort of there's just integer connecting these two frequencies. Then this half integer resonance, it's driven by first harmonic of gradient bump and also eccentricity. So if the beam is not well centered. And this nu z equals 2/2. It's second harmonic gradient bump. And also eccentricity here. And nu r equal to one. So it's first harmonic of horizontal field component. Causes the vertical amplitude growth. Okay, now from theory to practical things. So extraction elements. I've already thought about these harmonic coils, and I've shown photographs of them. So we use the harmonic coils in the center to center the beam, and close to nu are equal to 1, we use them to excite the resonance. And then when we are ready to take the beam out, we have electrostatic deflector, electromagnetic channel, and focusing channels. They are usually passive. And here we have also this is tripper, which is a charge exchange, usually from negative to positive. So H minus to protons. I'll talk about it this a bit later. This is a photograph of electrostatic deflector. The sparking plate here has been taken away, and the beam is going down here. Now this is not in the cyclotron. This is in the storage. So this bright thing here, stainless steel, is the high voltage, negative high voltage electrode, so-called antiseptum. And then here, there's the grounded electrode, and the gap is a few centimeters. In our case, the entrance gap is 4.5 millimeters, and out here, 5.5 millimeters. This is seen from the side, so you can see that there's a groove here, and the V-shaped opening here. I will show that in the next slide as well. So this is a deflector, and it shifts the beam outwards something like 1.5 centimeters, so it has been shifted here 1.5 centimeters, or close to it, so that the beam can fit inside this device here, because here there's this thickness here that must be omitted is a bit more than one centimeter. And here you can see the entrance as the beam assist. So this effective thickness here is zero. Of course, the field is not homogeneous here. And because it's V-shaped and some beam is hitting this, then it will distribute the heat to a larger area so that this doesn't melt. And here there's a carbon block here to stop the beam, which hits here. And this is another deflector drawing, 3D drawing from a superconducting cyclotron. And this is the cross section. So there's a septum here. There is no V-shape here. Very, very thin septum and electrode. Of course, this is the high voltage electrode. And all the sub corners must be omitted, so they're rounded here. Now let's look at electrostatic deflector so that we can estimate how big electric field we must have. So the force acting on the particle, so here this is the center of the machine. On the next page we will see it more clearly. So without electric field, we have this circle here, and if we add this electric field so that it points always outwards, then and it starts from here, then it the particle will make a larger circle, and the center of curvature of the orbit is shifted here. So now this rho is the new radius of curvature, and so the force is mv squared divided by the radius of curvature. Another force is charge times electric field, which is pointing outwards, and v cross b is pointing inwards. And solving for e here, we have this here from this equation. And now note here b rho naught, b rho zero, is the So rho zero is the bending radius without electric field. That's P over Q, which is mv divided by Q. So vb is mv squared divided by Q rho zero, this here. And this is nothing else than non-relativistically 2 times kinetic energy. So we put this vb here. And now the new bending radius is rho zero plus delta rho. It's here. This is rho. Rho is rho zero plus delta rho. And this can be written like this. And this here is 1 plus delta rho per rho zero to the power of minus 1. And delta rho is small with respect to rho zero, then we can use a binomial expansion, and then this thing here becomes 1 minus delta rho per rho zero. And that results into this. So that's the electric field that we need to get this delta rho. But now we don't. Now we go into this example where this is a cyclotron orbit here without electric field, and let's have a 45 degree long deflector, and this thing here, the distance between the two circles is then delta r, which is the shift of the beam here, and this delta rho is just the shift of the center of curvature, center of the circle, and this x here is this here, which is this is a rho naught times sine of 45, so rho naught divided by square root of 2, this here and this here, and this here is then delta rho plus rho naught divided by the square root of 2 here, and this is a Pythagoras 4x here, and calculating it further and further, we can then finally write. You could do this at home, this derivation, and here. Also this here because is 1 plus 2 times this here, because this delta rho is much smaller than rho zero, then we can use a binomial expansion. So it's 1 plus is 2 times this here. So 2 times square root of 2 is here. And here again, the same thing, that we can get this value for delta r. Here is rho minus x. So it results delta r is 0.29, roughly, times delta rho. So this shift here is 21%, but 29% of this shift of radius of curvature, or the other way around, delta rho is 3.4 times delta r. Okay, take an example. We have 100 MV proton with an extraction radius 1 meter, so we are still still in a normal conducting cyclotron. So magnetic field around 1.7 Tesla or so, a bit more. And we need the deflection, so delta R after 45 degrees of deflector, we need it to be 50 millimeters. So this is 3.4 times this 50 millimeters, and then this 2 times kinetic energy divided by charge and radius squared. Charge is E and the radius is 1 meter. It is 10.2 megavolts per meter when we had electric field is 10 megavolts per meter, and when we have 5 millimeter gap in the deflector, it means that the voltage must be about 51 kilovolts. This is actually quite close to what our our deflector maximum is. It is actually 60 kilovolts. It can hold when it's clean. So this way we could. In a very simple way, estimate how much voltage we must have in the antiseptum if you want to have here 15 millimeter shift in a realistic cyclotron. Okay, now this shows the beam, the last accelerated beam. And then the extracted beam in this kind of plane. So here we have the theta, the azimuthal angle, and this is the radius. And this is the entrance of the deflector. So before this we have had the precession of extraction to separate these beams. I've taken this from the simulations. And then here I have the electric field pointing outwards, and you can see that, well, first of all, you can see from here, because we are at the maximum radius here, so that this is in the middle of the hill. And now, due to this deflector, this beam is shifted here. So now there's a difference of 15. Actually here, something like 60 millimeters. At this point, this is the exit of the deflector. We can come to that a bit later. So now about the electromagnetic channel. Now we have managed to get the beam outwards about 15 millimeters. And then we can use a stronger element electromagnetic channel, but that we cannot use as the first element, because it is not possible because of this. So this is the median plane. These are the places for the conductors. So they consist of this kind of square conductors. Magnetic field goes like this. And the positions of these conductors has been chosen so that there's minimal effect on the magnetic field here, where we have the nu r equal to 1 resonance. And this shows the effect of the electromagnetic channel. This solid line is the so original that was proposed. That was Scanitronic C60 cyclotron deflector, but now we have a bit bigger, and we can see that the solid line here, there's a non-zero field at the point where we have the nu r equal to 1 resonance. So I optimize the positions of these to get this field here very close to zero. So that then this doesn't excite the resonance, but it's done with the harmonic coils. Okay, here we had at the entrance of the of the deflector. It ends at 320 degrees, and then this is the last orbit here. So this shows the cross section of the electromagnetic channel, and this is 10 millimeters, actually a bit more, because there's insulation around it. So this is the last turn, and we should have here at least 15 millimeters of spacing between them. But here you can see it's even more than 15 millimeters here in this picture. Okay, and now this separates the beams even more, and this goes easily, well, sort of easily out. And then after that, we must have focusing channels, because now there the field is dropping down very quickly. So it's radially defocusing. So we must have the radial focusing somehow. And this is, I will show in the next slide, how this looks like. So it's behind it, this copper ceiling. And then there's another after that. The first one is horizontally focusing, and the next is vertically focusing. So this is vertically defocusing. And this is horizontally defocusing. Okay, this is what happens. We have here iron bars seen from the end, and magnetic field, and this will get magnetized. So they will pull magnetic field lines here. So they are concentrated here. So the magnetic field here is higher than without these bars, and this bar is in the medium plane, so it pulls magnetic field lines to the left, so it decreases the field here. So here we have a positive gradient of magnetic field. So this is the hand drawing by Jan-Olof Bergström from Scanitronics, who for this focusing channel. Actually, here where the beam goes, the effect is non-zero, so there's also some bending, and it must be taken into account in the ion optics and positioning of these elements. And here, this is horizontal, so horizontal focusing and horizontal defocusing. Now here, this angle is not, or this is not along the orbit, actually, it's the angle. And then it's along the line from the center of the machine. And then it sort of goes sideways. It's sort of this way the dimension of the beam, if this was the true beam here. So S here and X here. Okay. These focusing channels can be also permanent magnets made by permanent magnets, but the gradient is fixed. And then this actually works only for fixed field cyclotrons. A lot like here, this C235 is a 235 MeV proton machine. It's a fixed energy, fixed particle, fixed field. So the relative gradient here is the same, because if we change the beam energy by changing the magnetic field here, then the B rho value of the beam changes, but the B doesn't change here. So the rho becomes a bigger or smaller, depending on which way the magnetic field goes there. And the focusing strength changes. Now about stripping extraction. The extraction efficiency for the system I just showed, so that we have the deflector and electromagnetic channel, is typically 50 to 90%, sometimes even lower than that 50%, which means that that because we lose tens of percents of the beam and in the deflector, because that's the way that's where the beam hits most, it activates it. It's not very good for maintenance and repairing. And it also makes the vacuum worse, and it may melt pieces wherever the beam hits. For negative ions and also for positive, as I will show a bit later, for negative ions, stripping is a very, very good choice. So we have H minus or D minus, so neutron or proton having two electrons, and then at some point they will hit something like 1 to 2 micrometer thick carbon foil, and that will strip the both electrons away. So the charge state changes from -1 to +1, and the direction of curvature changes. And this efficiency is very close to 100%. And also, as you will see in the next picture, it's not a long distance, but a short distance in the fringing field, which causes less focusing problems. But here, this negative ion caution must be taken. So we may have electromagnetic stripping at high magnetic fields and high velocities, because the extra electron is not very, very well tied in the proton here. So the binding energy is only 0.75 electron volts compared to 13.6, which is the ionization potential of hydrogen. So if you take the last electron away. And this is how it can happen. So here this is a fixed field cyclone 30 by IBA, and this is along this dashed line here. We can have the stripper foil, and if we have a stripper foil here, then the particles go out here at energy of 15 MeV, and at the outermost it's 30 MeV. And the position of the stripper foil here is adjusted so that all these beams here go to the same point here. So all energies go to this crossover point here. And then we can place here so-called combination magnet, dipole magnet here. We don't do it like this in the big cyclotron. We change the energy by changing the magnetic field and the RF frequency and take the beam out at the outermost point. But it is possible to do this as well. But with a smaller cyclotron, this is what we have to do, because it's a fixed field machine. The easy thing with fixed field machines is that they don't need any trim coils. In our cyclotron, it looks like this. So this is seen from inside. Sorry. You can see here the last focusing element for the positive ions. Then this bar is out there. So it's in this bellow taking out here. And the positive beam goes through this small magnet, which can bend the beam horizontally if needed. And now in the end of this bar here, we have this kind of stripper mechanism. So wheel with four foils, and we can rotate this, so we can choose which foil we use. When one foil breaks, then we start to use the other one. These are the zipper folds for the small cycle. So this can go in and out, and this can be rotated. Actually, here now the angle at which the beam hits the foil, it can be regarded as strong edge focusing, because on this side we have negative particle, and on this side positive particle, and the same magnetic field. But effectively, we can think of that we don't change the charge state, but we just change the magnetic field. So on this side we have positive magnetic field, and on this side negative magnetic field. So for example, we come from +2 Tesla to -2 Tesla, and it's very strong edge focusing. Like this has been done with it, to simulate this effect with some ion optic program here. But actually, this happens only in the radial direction, in the horizontal direction, not vertically. Because if this here is the carbon foil, and it is a medium plane, and if we are upper or lower, it doesn't make any difference. And the difference for the focusing, it starts exactly at the same position vertically, but horizontally it is there is an effect. Like here, this is +20 degrees, so it's just after, it's just so I have here plus and minus minus focusing, and it's just if I look the beam here, then here it's a bit +30 degrees, it looks like this, and minus it looks like this. This is the horizontal. The vertical is non-visible in this case. But here I must say that no matter how strong the focusing is, if the beam is very small, then there is no effect. Like in a normal optical lens, all the light rays that go through the center of the lens, they are not bent at all. But all the light rays that are away from the optical axis, they will be bent. So here, when the beam size radially is very small, then the total effect is not so big. But now stripping extraction for heavy ions. It's not really useful to have negative ions, because the only charge state can be -1. And then the charge to mass ratio is very, very small, and then the energies are very small. But we can have positive ions accelerated at start charge state Q1, and then after stripping, it's Q2. Typically, it's around 2. The factor is varies between something like 1.4 to 4. And here, this charge state here depends on the beam energy, and of course on the stripper foil sample. But more it depends on the energy. And then this is sort of fixed with energy, which means that then this charge state for acceleration itself is rather modest. So we cannot use the whole potential of the magnetic field. If you use a positive ions, we can use electron cycle from resonance ion sources to get very high charge states, and then we get much higher energies. But this can be also done. So motivation for this is high extraction efficiency, but it is high only if we have only one charge state of the stripping, and that the only charge state is the one that that we have fully naked ion. So we have taken all the electrons away. If we haven't, then we have at least two charge states, and only one can be taken out, because the bending radius of different charge states is different, and we can get only one charge state in a place where we want it to be. But this is what happens, for example, in this 300 AMeV cyclotron proposal. There actually the charge state before stripping is one. But how can we? So it's plus one. And we strip it, it's again plus one. But the idea, the trick is that that the thing that we are accelerating is molecular hydrogen in a charge state plus one. Your charge mass ratio is two. And after stripping, the molecule breaks. And then we have two protons. That's the trick. So it is very, very easy. But if we don't have fully stripped ions, then we have a distribution of charge states, and only one can be taken out, and then the efficiency goes down. This is done very often and daily in Dubna in Russia. This shows the idea of this Luciano Calabretta's idea of the molecular beam. So this should be a machine for radiation therapy for protons and carbon. Carbon is taken out here with just normal deflector. And here they have just electromagnetic electrostatic deflectors, but they have two. There is no electromagnetic deflector here. So this is for the heavier particles, carbon, and this is for proton. So up to this point, the beam is molecular hydrogen, H2 one plus, and here the molecule is broken. So actually, we are this stripping as well. So we have two protons after this, and they have a smaller bending radius, and they go out along this line. Very nice thing here. Very nice idea. And then the last self-extracting cyclotron, it's Will Clevens' idea. He's working for IBA. So here there's no electrostatic deflector. It's just a small elliptically shaped pole gap, about 50 millimeter at extraction. And then there's a groove in the in the pole. And it looks like this. So this is the shape of the lower pole, and there's this groove and the corresponding magnetic field here, and this is a photograph with the groove here. And when the beam come here, or let's look at in the magnetic field shifted here, then the bending radius is bigger. And they have tested it, so they have had 2 milliamps extracted beam efficiency, about 80%, and the emittance is 300 pi millimeter radiance. This is an emittance which we typically get from an ion source at low energies. And from cyclotrons, the emittances are typically 10 pi millimeter milliradians or less. So now this is very, very wide beam. But if this is just to use for irradiation, then this is quite nice. But we must dump the remaining 20 somewhere, and it is this here. This is the beam separator. It takes the outgoing beam goes that way, and this stops the beam that is bending too much to the left because of the very, very big emittance. So particles exit incoherently from the magnetic field just by acceleration because they go into the groove. So in one of there are four poles, and in one the groove is machined, and that provides sort of a magnetic septum. And at the same time, an extraction channel. And the harmonic coils are near nu are equal to one, like in precessional extraction, to get turn separation. And this beam catcher is a high power beam catcher, which collects the lost beam that is not well extracted. And now a few words about multi-turn versus single-turn extraction. So the single-turn extraction, the existing high-intensity extraction with electrostatic deflector, it's in a PSI injector cyclotron. So the single-turn extraction and the small RF phase width. It's not possible otherwise. But there they have, because high intensity, high current density, so there's a longitudinal space charge, so that causes some problems, but they can be overcome that is somehow. So this is the singleton extraction. And also in the big PSR cyclotron, it's singleton extraction, but it's a separated sector cyclotron, so that it's easier. But there it's evident that you must have it because the beam power is, the maximum is 1.4 megawatts, and you cannot lose very much of it because otherwise it will drill a hole wherever it hits. But and then the other extreme is this multi-turn extraction, the self-extraction cyclotron, the turn separation is not good enough, and here there is just a smooth transition from this high field to low field. So effectively it's quite large area. Okay, that was all about extraction, and we will stop here, and the next lecture will be on some technical things. So thank you very much.